Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to episode 242 of Five and Dive. I am your host, Craig Goldstein, editor-in-chief of Baseball Prospectus. Joining me as my co-host, lead prospect writer for Baseball Prospectus, Jeffrey Paternostro. Jeff, we are going to be talking about the latest episode of House of the Dragon. No, I'm kidding. How's it going?
We already have to do that for all you kids out there because people keep asking.
Oh, I didn't know he actually put you through it. I didn't realize that.
Oh, somebody sent an email and Jarrett just went off for 15 minutes and then I banned all House of Dragon questions from the show for the rest of the series.
I have takes on it, but they're not interesting to anyone, so sure. It's not important. It's fine, ultimately.
I'm a big fan of the Matt Smith fine, Doctor so. Who era, so.
Sure. I think
before Matt, Stephen Moffat got completely up his own, yeah.
I think the biggest problem I have with Matt Smith, and not on the show or even really as an actor, is that I talked to Bauman about this at some point, and I think he wrote an article eventually on it at The Ringer before he left, but he categorized types of hot guys or whatever, and he put Matt Smith in it, and
do
people find him hot? Is he hot?
I don't think so. I remember the first episode in his Doctor Who era, there's a whole scene where he's changing on the roof of a hospital. So he's obviously still in the David Tennant outfit when he regenerates. So it's sort of establishing his costume or his fashion style, which is an important thing for every doctor, I guess. But he's just sort of changing there. And Karen Gillan, who plays Amy Pond, his companion for the first couple seasons, is eyeing him up. And I'm just no, I don't find this believable. No.
I mean, look, he's a very talented actor. Yep. I enjoy Matt Smith. He's an interesting looking guy.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He's an interesting looking guy, yes.
Anyway, all that aside, I wouldn't say there's a ton going on, but there's some baseball.
There's been some baseball over the weekend, yeah.
So that's the best way to put it. There's been some baseball over the weekend. Why don't we talk about it? Our first segment, Judge, Jury, and Middle Executioner. I believe you are making fun of my tweet, which the suspect.
Did you know Major League Baseball players can hit center cut pitches, Craig?
Well, so it was a very... So let me frame this for listeners who might not be following me on Twitter because they're smart. I quote tweeted a Cespedes Barbecue tweet that was talking, it highlighted Luis Perdomo's reaction to giving up Aaron Judge's second home run of a game that the Yankees won 12-8, I think, in the end. It was originally 4-0 or 4-1 Milwaukee. The bullpen broke down. Judge had two homers in the game. Perdomo gave up the second one. He absolutely crushed it. The catcher also did that slow crumble that they do when the ball goes out, and Perdomo threw up his arms. It was again, as the barbecue said, objectively the right reaction.
Yeah.
But what I quote tweeted it, and I just kind of fired this off. I wasn't trying to make a statement. Mm-hmm. But I said I've noticed, especially in his most recent barrage, I don't know the exact number. He's had 9 or 10 homers in 13 games or something insane.
Yeah.
There's been I feel every second or third one I see a clip of, and I just think that's the worst pitch I've ever seen.
Mm. I mean, generally speaking, home runs are hit off bad pitches. I will say his first one was not a great pitch. But he took it up and away and drove it 10 rows back opposite field.
Yeah, he hit it 415 opposite field. It was fucking majestic. This is not Aaron Judge is getting pipe shots. Mm-hmm. What I meant by saying, I said something how do these guys keep doing this? And what I meant by doing this is I know these guys throw bad pitches all the time. You get whiffs on middle. Guys aren't expecting it. They foul it off, whatever. I know all of that happens, as despite everyone informing me as though I didn't. What I meant by it was, like, I don't know why people are pitching to him.
Sure.
Like, and look, you can say, if you go back and watch the Perdomo pitch, it's supposed to be low and away breaking ball, and it backed up so badly that it was like this cement mixer half looping into the middle of the plate that he absolutely destroyed. I understand he wasn't trying to throw it there. That guys miss their spots all the time.
Yes.
I guess my thought is, like, if I'm pitching around Aaron Judge, like, I'm not throwing, I don't know, just throw the fastball off the plate. Like, you're not, like, you don't, just walk him. Honestly, like, I understand, I said, and I said this eventually later in a thread, like, I said, maybe I'm just built different. And then I said in parentheticals, like, scared. I would just pitch around him at this point. The Yankees lineup has not been particularly good.
Yeah.
I don't know why anyone's pitching to him. I would give him the Bonds treatment. He's doing insane shit. I think people should react to that. I don't know.
I will point out that so that down and away spot that Perdomo was trying to hit, I don't know, I think it's a zone 9 or whatever on the heat.
He might have been trying to throw a ball. It was just a horrendous
pitch. I'm just saying, he's slugging 259 against pitches down and away. Middle, which if you think about it, the track of the pitch is going to go from middle to down and away, ideally. So sometimes when the pitch is back up or you miss your spot arm side enough, that's where it's going to end up. He slugged 1,057. So yes, look, Aaron Judge is pretty good at hitting middle fastballs.
I had a lot of people say this to me, and I'm not saying this isn't like I was tired of hearing it. It's exactly right. Aaron Judge is doing to middle pitches something that, again, like, guys miss these pitches a lot, or hit them for singles, or foul them off, or watch them go by because they freeze and lock up, or whatever. Aaron Judge is hitting almost every single one he sees for home runs. And it's remarkable. And that is to his credit. My commentary was not like Aaron Judge is getting lucky, easy things to hit. And other guys aren't. It was just that, like, I would just not be throwing, like, pitches that could even potentially back up into that area. Like, I think they should just be walking him or whatever, like really pitching around him, not like semi pitching around him. I will point out, it was funny. I saw somewhere, I think maybe the Codify Twitter or whatever, Judge has had the 8th most middle pitches in baseball this year. So it's not like he's not getting them. But to people's point, he's killing them.
Yes.
And that is to his credit. That is exactly what he should be doing.
So the other thing, we think about this in different terms, right? Because he's such a big dude. It's a huge zone. So if you can get it to the edge of the zone, especially down, he has trouble covering it. But because it's such a big zone, it's also such a big middle area, right?
Yeah. So I had people saying that, and it's true. And I'm not trying to say it's not true, but I don't think it speaks to my point.
Right. The point is,
just because of what you said.
Right.
You
the risk is if you try to
throw
him.
There's so much that's not middle too, right? Like,
yeah,
he has a bigger
non. If you try to throw him any strike, it's more likely to go middle to him. I won't even use, like, Altuve as an example, but then, like, Gleyber Torres, right? And I do wonder from, like, the pitching point of view, it's such an unusual zone, it might be difficult to adjust to.
Because if
you want to get up and out of the zone against him, you almost have to feel like you're throwing the ball at eye level to any other hitter.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but I would. So you're right that, like, his middle is bigger, but I think the counterpoint is that every other zone is also bigger. So easier not to throw it there and still throw a strike. Do you know what I mean? Right. Like Altuve, but if you want to use as the...
Here's the problem, Craig. Here's the slugging at the top of the zone by thirds. 8-16.
Well, stop throwing
10-22.
It there. My whole argument is stop throwing pitches to him. I just don't know why guys are doing this. Sorry, go ahead.
So yeah, it's just one of, like, he is not having a Barry Bonds season, but he is basically having the closest season to Barry Bonds in recent memory.
Yeah, I have not read it yet. Mike Petriello today wrote an article. I mean, it's like arguably a top 5 offensive season all time.
Yeah,
I think we're in the zone where it's reasonable and countered, you know, balanced by the fact that the rest of the Yankee offense has been pretty shitty of late.
As was often true with those Barry Bonds Giants teams.
Absolutely. That you give him the Bonds treatment, at least a little bit. I mean, I don't know.
He is leading the league in intentional walks. He's been intentionally walked 17 times. He's leading the league in walks overall. As he should be.
As he should be. But I'm just saying, Milwaukee was down three runs or whatever when Perdomo pitched, and they're pitching Perdomo. Like, it wasn't like they were really competing. It's just why I don't know. It's just wild to me. If I was a pitcher at this point, I'd be like, this guy, like, I will take my chances with the next guy. And you know, someone will say, well, that's why you're not a pitcher, you're not competitive, whatever. Okay, fine. I mean, fair enough. But this, he's hitting them all for home runs. So I don't know what to tell you. And again, like, I want to be very clear, like, Aaron Judge is also hitting other very difficult pitches for home runs. Like, he's doing it all.
Are you saying Aaron Judge is not just a quad A mistake hitter, Craig?
Yeah, right. My whole point is, like, I don't mean it was not a commentary on him. It was like, why are pitchers even bothering?
It's like the Office Pam meme. It's just a photo of Mike Hessman and Aaron Judge. These are the same picture.
But I do, just to go really quickly back to the bigger or smaller zone thing, I think the counterpoint is, like, you're right. Like, Altuve's middle is technically smaller, but it's also hard to throw a pitch in any quadrant of the zone that doesn't touch his middle because it's such a condensed zone. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, okay.
Like, he forces you into his plate coverage.
I'm not good at geometry, Craig.
Okay, me neither, honestly. I don't know why we're... Anyway, I should point out, by the way, that this home run that we're talking about was Judge's 59th of the season. I believe we wondered whether he was going to get to 61 or break it. I think he's going to at this point. It seems pretty safe.
Yeah, it does.
We've got plenty of season left at this point. Four or five series. How high is he going to go?
63 is my official prediction.
Okay, he's going to clear it by two. We're going to get a lot of columns about what the real home run, more columns about what the real home run record is, yada, yada, yada. He will have the AL record.
He will not get to 62 before, or not get to 61 before the 154th game, though.
Oh, that's going to be, okay.
That's my official prediction.
I also should point out, it would be very funny if it happened on the Apple TV game. People seem unable to watch. It is remaining on that, as far as I understand. We talked about this some in the last few podcasts. He's the MVP. Seems like everyone I've seen has come around to the fact that he's the MVP at this point.
Yeah. The objectively funniest outcome is, like, Munetaka Murakami hits, like, one more home run than Judge this year. He's got some catching up to do.
I don't know what he's up to at this point. 55. I know he's at 55 still. Yeah. Okay, I was going to say that was the last I had seen.
He's hitting 333, 471, 750 with one fewer walk than strikeout. He's 22.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so back to Judge.
Mm-hmm.
He's in all likelihood going to be the MVP. He's in all likelihood going to be the AL and the AL home run record holder. What does this mean for his contract situation in the offseason? I wrote the article on this midseason, and I thought he's going to get 250-ish, or I think I said more than – he's going to clear the Rendon contract, which was 245 over 7.
Yeah.
I think we had talked maybe – I said maybe like 270-ish or something like that. Is he going to get the eighth year? Should one season, even if it's this season, convince a team to give him that eighth year?
I think you're going to get into a situation where a team's probably going to harper this to a certain extent. You might get like 9 years and
lower
300 AAV, so they can spread the AAV a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Is that team the New York Yankees?
That is, he had a fun, he, like, I think The Boston quote was funny, to be clear.
Okay.
I think he's given it back a little bit to the organization for the preseason press conference. I don't know if he'll actually go to Boston. I don't know if Boston's actually going to spend that kind of money. Oh, man, him in that park. Not that Yankee Stadium is a particularly cavernous
park.
Yeah, but like that, just like absolutely hitting balls through the Green Monster. It's like taking out like the scoreboard numbers and stuff of it.
They will have to replace
panel,
like whole, yeah. parts of the wall.
Yeah, I just keep thinking about the Mark McGwire home run derby performance there, but just like regular season games.
Yeah, so I don't think, like, none of his home runs are really like cheapies, right? Like he hits the ball harder than anyone in the league.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's been rumors about the Mets potentially being interested. He'll hit plenty of balls to like second tank.
I think the Giants are going to be interested again. It's hometown team. They're going to have a ton of money to spend. They're coming off
a bad
year.
Can he hit one in McCovey's Cove?
Opposite field. Opposite if anyone is going to do it, it's like him or Stanton, right? What I was going to say about Boston is, like, again, not that they're cheap, but like he does hit a lot of those laser beam home runs where it's not necessarily about, not that he can't hit a moonshot. He can and does. But he does also hit a lot of the just like, also like Vlad does a lot of these like absolute just like yank jobs where it's just hammered. It's a line drive that just never.
Yeah.
Like it's drops like
21 degree launch angle.
And those are going to all be like singles. If he was in Boston. So obviously he's there, you know, 9-10 times a year at this point, thus far, not starting next year, but up till now anyway. And then he's been, I don't know his numbers there, but I suspect he's been Aaron Judge. I don't think it would really matter, but yeah. Do you have basically it was just like, they've got great fans there. It's a great experience or whatever. Yeah. I mean, good for him. Give it back to the Yankees who have,
he's hitting in Fenway Park?
No, I don't. Please tell me.
195, 303, 390.
Get out. Really?
Yeah.
He's not been Aaron Judge in Boston.
You know, the best stadium, I don't want to limit it to like three games. The best stadium he's played more than 10 games in. Oh, not counting Yankee Stadium, obviously. Oh, yeah, not really. No, here's one for you. Is that the highest? I think that is the highest, yeah. Guaranteed rate field. Right, whatever. It's still called guaranteed rate? Whatever. The White Sox Stadium.
I believe it is guaranteed rate.
367, 563, 833.
I'm sorry, say that again?
367, 533, 833.
Jesus. Yeah. So also, I believe I said he's like perfect for the White Sox. They'll never do it. A perfect fit for that team. And we've seen them struggle, obviously.
Nick Schaefer's going to complain that he's right-handed and they don't need another right-handed power bat. But
look, not to be like Rickon about AJ Pollock, but like he can hit righties. He's fine. He can hit righties. It's not bad. He would be he'd just be such a perfect fit for them in a lot of ways.
He's also been very good in Seattle as well. So put him in that outfield with Julio and
again another team that can spend.
Yeah,
won't but can. No, I do think San Francisco's interesting. It would obviously be a big test of his power. I don't know. It would make a lot of sense to me. I was going to say like the Yankees, you know, giving it back to the Yankees is fair. The Yankees haven't I mean, like the offer they made him, I think we said at the time I don't think it was insulting.
Right.
At the very least. And I saw someone else point this out that he's never really countered. He's just said no.
Mm-hmm. Well, he bet on himself, Craig, and he's going to win.
No, he did. And he was right to. And I guess I'm just saying, like, I think he wanted to get to free agency.
Yeah.
I don't know that it was personal. It just seems like he wanted to get to free agency. I will ask you the question in our rundown because I don't know the goddamn answer. Is this the best walk year of all time?
I think so. Yeah.
I haven't looked at, like, I don't know who else has the best. I know like I remember as a Dodger fan, Adrian Beltre's 48 home runs.
It was very good, yeah. And he's obviously
a after being a promising hitter who never really broke out. Like, that was a breakout year. Sorry, 49 home runs. Or no, sorry, 49 was a double. Sorry. 48 home runs at age 25 in 2004 for the Dodgers. I remember.
Yeah, it was like almost a 10-win season by BREF, so probably previously.
Yeah, I mean, 334, 388, 629.
Elite defense at third, obviously.
Elite. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's up there to me. I don't know. I don't have like a catalog of the best of all time. It's hard for me to imagine. Again, this is one of the top five hitting seasons or close to it of all time. It's hard to imagine a better one. He's also played good right field defense and capable center field defense.
So I figured a better way to actually do this would be look at expected home runs by park at Savant instead of doing 10 game sample sizes in various stadiums.
Sure.
Unsurprisingly, he'd have hit 67 home runs already if he was played in Coors. And 67 in
Great American. Go play with Chris Bryant, man.
Great American Ballpark. So the thing is, like, after the Chris Bryant thing, I'm just going to say the Rockies are capable of doing this.
Absolutely. Let's see it. I would like to see it.
67 in Great American Ballpark. The Reds are not capable of doing this.
No.
I mean, they're capable of doing this, but they're also incapable. So the interesting ones where he would have hit more, you already have 62 with the White Sox. He would already have 55 with Boston, for the record, which is not the lowest. The lowest is the lowest is Pittsburgh, 52. I don't know. I guess that may have a big
interesting
left center. I don't know. I don't think of that. I know it's a pitcher's park, but I don't think of it an extreme pitcher's park. Only 54 in Baltimore. So that ridiculous wall would
take away that left field wall. Yeah, yeah.
61 for Anaheim, put him in the outfield with Trout, sure, why not. 61 with Texas, 62 with Arizona and the White Sox, 63 with Milwaukee, again good park to hit.
Yes, 61, which again he hit homers there.
Yeah,
we saw.
Here's one for you. How about the Phillies?
So I was
a center fielder.
So I actually was talking about this with RJ Anderson, who was writing a post on like potential landing spots. But they just signed like multiple. They have literally their last three big signings are outfielders.
I mean, outfielders,
quote unquote outfielders. Fine.
Judge but, like, can actually are play they going center. To do... It's not a big center field either. Not that Yankee Stadium is, but.
No, but you just traded for Brandon Marsh too. I mean, I'm not saying you let Brandon Marsh stop you from signing.
Okay, yeah.
No, but I'm just saying, you are you really going to play him full time in center?
No, but Harper's going to DH a fair bit. You can slide him over to right.
And
I mean, the ones that make
Castellanos and
they've been doing it this year.
Well, he's been hurt, too. I mean, Harper was hurt for a while, which I guess you could argue is the same thing. I think Philly's going to go big on a shortstop.
That's my one thing why he might not come back to the Yankees. The Yankees might also do that. You've got Correa.
Waiting out the market and getting Kiner Falefa because you have Anthony Volpe coming.
Yeah, I mean, you can.
Now they're going to do it? Where are they going to? I mean, Volpe would be fine at second. I'm not
disagreeing. Probably should play second. In all honesty, like, he can play short, but it's not like.
Oh yeah, no. I'm not saying it would be
Correa or Turner.
Let me take it back. They should do it.
Yeah.
I just think like after waiting out this last crop,
mm-hmm.
to do it just feels like a little late. You know what I mean?
Given the fact that Lindor signed, it didn't hit the market, and you get another pop at Correa. Like, is the shortstop market really that much worse than it was?
They should absolutely look. I know Yankees fans will bitch and moan. They should absolutely sign Correa.
Yeah.
He's perfect for that. I mean, like, he's a prime time guy. They should absolutely sign him.
Between Double A and Triple A this year, the 21-year-old, so youngish for those levels.
He had a good season.
254, 348, 468.
He had that really rough start, which you saw in person.
He did.
He was much better after that.
He's a nice prospect. He's going to be at least top 10, probably top 5 on the 101.
Yeah. But
again,
you sign. Yeah, no, you go for the. Look, I'm not disagreeing. Yeah. And that will be even better at second base. Yeah. No argument. The one team we didn't talk about that has a budget to do this, the Dodgers.
Yep. I mean, they're always, you know, they're always
getting
a call.
If they don't sign Turner.
Yeah, they're always getting a call from
the agent. They have Justin Turner coming off the books. They have Trey Turner, if they don't re-sign him.
Kershaw.
Kershaw is technically coming off the books. I expect, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he does another one-year deal or something. They have $16 million in Heaney and Anderson coming off the books. They have, you know, they could non-tender or trade Cody Bellinger.
Yeah.
He's $17 million. Gallo is a free agent. They have
they need to bring the Bauer money. Yeah.
The money they have. Yeah, they need the money they have allotted to Bauer, assuming the suspension holds up, is off their books.
They're always going to be.
I don't think they'll do it,
right.
But it's a possibility. All right. Have we said enough on Aaron Judge?
There'll be more to come, but yes.
Yeah, I was going to say there's never really enough to say about him in this season at this point, but I think for today, it's enough. Our second topic of the day, Detroit Boogie, they have hired a president of baseball ops or GM. I
believe they gave him the full president.
I think their initial tweet was like slash.
President of baseball operations.
Okay, Scott Harris from the Giants. I'm just going to make a snarky quote. I don't really mean it. I said it to you already. You definitely want a co-architect of the 2022 Giants season.
I had someone in
That's
the
what
game.
You want.
I had someone in the game actually text me that after the
did you really?
Yeah.
He I mean, look, it's the easy joking, shot. It's yeah. an easy shot. He is very highly respected. Jeff Passan used the phrase rising star. I think that's fair. I think this is a good move for Detroit. The Al Avila mold and era did not go well. They need to modernize. They need to get, you know, they need to catch up with the rest of the teams in the league. This is a very tough place to be walking into. And I will also say, by the way, I thought it was a little weird that they fired. We've done this a lot, that they fired Avila after, you know, when they fired him after like the draft and things like that. But I didn't think they were going to replace him in season. I didn't think they were going to find their guy in season. But I guess credit to them that
yeah,
they did.
Well, like, I mean, I'm a little surprised the Giants let him interview in season, but I guess it doesn't
really
functionally.
I guess for them, it doesn't really matter that much.
If you're willing to let him go. And I believe he was, I don't know if he actually interviewed for the Mets job last offseason or not. I know he was supposedly in and around the rumors for it, but I think they have let him sort of spread his wings and look for a number one seat elsewhere generally. So sure.
Right. So yeah, I don't know how much, I mean, like, again, this is a really tough spot to walk into. Are there any tougher ones? Is there another? You get the Rockies.
So I was discussing with a few people yesterday. The Rockies are the ones that obviously come.
I think the Rockies is not only ownership, but it's environmental.
Ownership. But here's the thing.
I know Rockies fans say, like, oh, like hashtag Coors. They like to, you know, it's like, oh, people talk about it too much. It's a legitimate problem that you need to crack on a roster assembly and like player development level.
Right.
And that to me is what makes it the hardest one.
So they both have basically had every, and the Tigers have had better prospects come up, but they haven't really hit on any other prospect, their last crop of prospects. So, you know,
right.
Torkelson has struggled. Riley Green's been league average, which is fine, but you know, he hasn't come up and
league average is a 21-year-old. Swing and miss issues are tangible.
He hasn't come up and been Michael Harris, right?
Correct.
That's not a thing that has happened. And because he hasn't, that does in some way affect his projection going forward to an extent, not to a major extent, but I'm saying.
Yeah, there's some swing and miss issues there for sure.
You know, Mize wasn't great and got hurt. Scuba was all right and got hurt. Matt Manning's been bad. Alex Fado has not been particularly good or healthy. So that's like their major. You know, first round, Scuba was a day two guy. They're major pitching prospects. And then you look at the Rockies, right? You know, Brendan Rodgers, below league average hitter. Ryan McMahon's been about a league average hitter. Just sort of scrolling through to Garrett Hampson's never really put it together. On the pitching side, you know, what's happened to Marquez and Freeland after their sort of
big backslides. Good.
Yeah. And again, you do have, I think, you have a different kind of ownership problem with Monfort. You know, the issue in Detroit is you don't know if the kids are going to spend, if they're trying to sell. You know, they have more. I mean, the Chris Bryant contract is what it is, but Detroit has significant, I won't call it dead money, but major expenditures on players that have disappointed so far in Eduardo Rodriguez and Javier Baez.
I loved that Rodriguez signing. Yep. Some of it, he was gone from the team for 3 months. Right. I don't think that's necessarily a sunk cost. Right. I have a lot of concerns about Baez.
He hasn't been awful, right? He's running a 4.35 ERA. Like, it's not been a disaster season,
right?
But
right, it's mostly been he was gone for half of it.
Yeah, Baez might be in the middle of a hit tool collapse, which is always a risk with Javier Baez.
Always a risk. He could also come back and just do like the Mets run that he had, which was phenomenal.
Right. He's not hitting for power, which would be my bigger concern.
And again, like, all the supporting pieces are pretty bad. I mean,
is true in Colorado, like, too. I'm winding back to,
sorry,
Colorado has a better system right now.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's that close. And Colorado's system's not great, but there are some real guys there. Now, again, they have the same problem.
I like Jackson.
They can't
quite a bit.
Yeah, they can't develop them, Colorado, for various reasons. But Detroit has no track record of player development recently either. Now, that's something that Harris is going to have to come in and fix, and the Giants have certainly been better at.
I think what the Rockies actually do pretty well is their international guys are at least interesting, especially you like and have seen a lot of Ezekiel Tovar.
Yep.
Adeel Amador, interesting. Yeah,
Warming Bernabeu can probably hit. Warming Bernabeu.
This guy in Fresno this year, Yankiel Fernandez.
Yep.
People seem to like.
Yep.
These are interesting guys, and they're not all going to pan out.
Right.
And some of them are going to pan out and be Raimel Tapia, who was really interesting and then just okay. Yeah. But they churn these guys out,
mm-hmm.
Which I don't feel like Detroit has been doing. Again, I said, like, I really like Jackson Job, but like, once you get past him, and the recent draft, I'm blanking on who did they even get in the 2022 draft?
Probably something I should know, to be fair.
I mean,
off the top of my head, but it's not coming to me. I obviously had an early pick. Jace Jung, that's right.
Oh, yeah. Jace Jung. Okay. So, I mean, he's good.
Yeah.
But like, it falls off. Dylan Dingler hasn't had a great season. Supposed to be part of their second tier.
They have not hit on second and third round picks, like late day one, early day two picks at all.
Right.
And I saw them all come through Norwich in recent years when, Norwich existed as an affiliate. And it was like, they were not drafting well, even before you get into the developmental issues they've had with their better prospects.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a very tough situation.
$900,000 for Kinston Liniac in 2018. And he looks like he was hurt this year, but last year he hit 193 in A ball. Sam McMillan, I think they have $1 million to as a prep catcher. Yeah, and I think he's already voluntarily retired.
Right. I remember that.
Ray Rivera was their second round pick in 2017, can't really hit. JUCO outfielder. Parker Meadows was an overslot.
We just had a 10 pack on him.
Yeah, and is like
might be okay.
Bench outfielder.
Yeah.
2019, Nick Quintana. They ended up they traded to the Marlins. Lipsius I saw and wasn't particularly good. Ryan Kreidler I like okay, but again, bench infielder probably.
I think the thing is, like, maybe he ends up starting, but like, he should be a bench infielder, right?
Like,
if you're any good.
I just went through three or four draft classes quickly. you miss on all your second and third rounders in that, it starts to, you start to feel the effects quickly, right? That's how you don't have like anybody with a 100 OPS plus this year.
Well, and here's an interesting comparison. Maybe I think, but like you look at the punishment Houston got for their cheating scandal was they lost their first two picks in two consecutive drafts. And that can have this deleterious effect where it like hollows out and there's, but like they also got Hunter Brown, right?
Right. They're like, developmental.
They Hunter can, like, and Hunter Brown is here and looking fucking good.
Yeah.
And like they, because of their development, and we'll get into this in our next topic too, but like because of what they can do with the guys that they get, it's not as harmful as like if Detroit lost their first and, well, just let's say their first round picks in two consecutive drafts, where would they be? I mean, they'd be way up Schitt's Creek. They're already up Schitt's Creek, but like they'd be even further, right? Like, yeah, I don't know. I just think.
And I think that playing out the Houston metaphor a little further, Houston was actively trying to compete in this era and they snuck like Yiner Diaz into a deal, right? Well, Detroit, who is actively trying to sell and build out their farm system, like, I don't know if they traded for a prospect as good as Yiner Diaz in the Avila era. Now, the other thing is, with Harris coming in, these are like, this is low-hanging fruit if you fix this stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
But again, this is the kind of thing, it's going to take time. You can't come in and, you know, it's going to take
And look, like, Hunter Brown is
it took, you know, it took San Francisco, which I think had a better major league roster and an owner more willing to spend money, a few seasons to ramp up.
Yeah, and they are still in a process of, I mean, like, I really do, 2021 was an outlier type season, and that's fine, but they're not atrocious.
Right.
They're, it feels that way, I'm sure, to San Francisco fans because of last year, but like, they're not atrocious, and they're, I mean, I also want to go back to just Hunter Brown real quick, fifth round pick for Houston, out of Wayne State University. I mean, this is just, this is a great scout. This is a great, this is a great development story. And he's in the majors in, again, that was 2019. He's in the majors. There's no minor league season in 2020.
Yeah.
He gets a full season last year and he's in the majors the next year. I mean, that's, that's kind of remarkable.
I will say,
he is 24. They could push him, but like, I don't know.
I will say the actual main difference between taking over the Tigers' job and taking over the Rockies' job is the Rockies play in the NL West and the Tigers play in the AL Central. So you can be a 2022 level Giants team in this division and be right there. So,
yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know what else, who else you'd put in that worst.
The Marlins, but like the thing with the Marlins, they're not going to spend.
I said the Angels. Do you, is that unfair? I mean, they've just. It's obviously
with the new ownership group coming in, that might make
That's true. Maybe it's different. Good point.
With the Marlins, you just kind of have to, I don't want to say luck your way into, but do enough to get like a league average offense. And I think you can be a wild card contender at least with that pitching staff. They've done a decent job. I mean, they traded a lot of them at the deadline, but they've done a decent job finding relievers either on like minor league free agents.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can say Cincinnati, they really did do a good job this year, especially of in restocking their system.
It's a really good system. Again, I don't know what that ownership's going to do in terms of money. So winnable.
No, me neither. But at least have the system.
They've been
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Pittsburgh is probably a good answer for this.
I mean, there's more interesting pieces than Detroit, I guess. Is
yes.
In some ways, at least, anyway. I guess, you know, if you still believe in Torkelson, you say he's at least a counter to O'Neill Cruz or something like that. But
Arizona's kind of a mess, but, like, they're major league. Like, they have good major league players on their
team. And some good young major league players, too. Yeah. But, I mean, they're pushing a lot of those – what, that year they had eight top 100 picks or whatever. Mm-hmm. They're pushing a lot of those guys into the majors. Trey Jameson came up recently.
Yeah,
Why don't we
– Tommy Henry's been up, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Would you like to take a break before or
I need to refill my coffee, Craig. So,
all right, let's take a hard five and we'll be back. Okay. We're back with episode 242 of Five and Dive. Our third topic, player development is easy. Tell them, Wash. We wanted to talk about Jarrett Seidler's article, which was up today, Tuesday the 20th, Baseball Prospectus. It started with something he first blurted out on For All You Kids.
Yes, so often you. Happens, yeah.
Do you want to set the scene here?
So we were talking about the Cabrian Hayes sunflower seeds thing, which we
will get to,
which was a bit of discourse. And then he just sort of got into, you know, the actual baseball crime here is everything the Pirates do off the field in terms of like how they run their 25-man roster. And then we sort of got into their player development issues in recent years. And then he started going off on Henry Davis versus Dalton Rushing to make a point in terms of like one-on-one status, since we're starting to consider those kind of things. And then I kind of glazed over, and 15 minutes later we moved on to something else. But then he turned into an article and reliably informed. At some point he was just listing off players he drafted in his ridiculously deep fantasy league with Brett. Uh-huh. So yeah,
I'm sure people were very interested.
Yeah.
So Dalton Rushing, for people not necessarily initiated with the 2022 draft,
probably be most
we were about Chase Young. Yeah. It was the Dodgers' first pick in the draft. He was not a first round pick. They were dropped 10 spots in the draft because of the CBA penalties that apply to teams over the luxury tax. So Dalton Rushing was their first round pick. He is a catcher from Louisville. You might have heard they've had success with catchers from Louisville, Will Smith, for example. Henry Davis is also a catcher from University of Louisville. They are recruiting good catchers over there. Henry Davis was the first overall pick for the Pirates. He's been good.
Yes.
Not great. That's not meant to be a slight. He's been good.
Yeah.
But I think Jarrett made this point well in the article. Like, he's been good. He hasn't crushed Double A. He's been promoted there this year. He's going to be 23 entering next year.
He's been hurt a fair bit, which is certainly.
Yeah, he had a wrist injury, which has harmed his ability to hit.
He's
going to
be at the Arizona Fall League, so I'm sure they'll have plenty of people talking about Henry.
I think they'll probably be talking about him positively. He's a good player.
He's gonna it's a launching pad. He's gonna be facing a lot of gas Double A relievers because that's how it works in the AFL every year.
Rushing was like a late riser. Yep. He hit well. He broke out right before the season. Mm-hmm. Hit well on the Cape. Then came to school. Was exceedingly good.
Yeah.
He hit 310, 470, 686 for Louisville this year. He's been just obliterating the ball in low A we should point out Rancho Cucamonga is the low A team for the Dodgers. It's a very good place to hit.
And he's hitting. They're not AC. Are they ACC now? Whatever. They're a major college hitter in low A, so you would expect
in low A
and
in a
launching
pad. No idea what he's hitting. 424, 539, 778.
That's good
in 28 games.
Yeah.
And one thing Jared points out is he doesn't hit the ball on the ground very much, which neither does Will Smith. Again, you put the ball in the air in Rancho Cucamonga, it's going to go very far.
It is.
We'll see how it translates to what is now the high A Midwest League. Obviously the ball carries very differently there. Mm-hmm. I suspect that's where he'll start next season. What's the gap between these two guys? I mean, go ahead.
I want to say generally Jarrett and I have talked about this premise literally for the entire time we've both been at BP.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's been saying for years, we need to consider developmental context more. I'm going to put that aside for 1 second. I know that's the thrust of his article. My main takeaway from this is, and I think this is in, I have a different perspective on this because I do not do draft coverage in the way that other prospect writers and sites do. I just don't. it's for a variety of reasons. It's not interesting to me. I don't think you can split focus and be effective as one person.
Our focus is on pro.
Yeah, that's coverage. It's always been our area of expertise. And look, we all see draft guys. If there's interesting draft guys, I'm going to probably go see Utah Valley State in a month. So it's not that I don't go out of my...
Yeah, you saw Mazzucato.
I saw Sean Newcomb. I've seen the UConn guys. Yeah. You know, I did with... Now that I'm 15 minutes from Utah and 40 from BYU, I'll get a lot of... You know, I'm going to go see Pac-12 and Big 12 baseball because, A, it's easily accessible, and being like, look, those draft prospects get ranked. Like, we're going to rank Dalton Rushing. You know, seeing them in April and May is just like seeing a ball player in April and May in a lot of ways. But anyway, my point is, as I've rambled on for context, how long we consider your draft status is an interesting question, right?
Yeah.
So there's always going to be carry on as a former first round pick, and for Davis as a first overall pick. Like, I don't think he's going to have Mickey Moniak's issues, right? But Mickey Moniak is going to continue to get opportunities until he's 30 because he was a first overall pick. And like, you can say it was a cost saving member, but he was going to go in the top 10 picks.
So was Davis, by the way.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people thought he deserved it too. Yeah. I talked to scouts who do amateur coverage, who thought he was a valid 1-1 pick, but he was also a cost savings.
Yeah. But you look at that and like there's reason for it, right? These guys were among, if not the best players in their age cohort at the time.
Right.
Of their draft, you know, Moniak at 18, Davis at 21 or so. So I think that does matter, but affiliated baseball, not even the majors per se, is a different animal. And how you adjust to that, and how you develop in that, I think you can see changes very quickly. And look, this gets reflected in not just ours, but I think everybody's prospect rankings. Like, you get a year out, you look at Davis's draft class, setting Davis aside, it's not going to come close to being ranked in order anymore in the way they were drafted even 2 years ago. It's just not. So I do think you have to kind of
One way of saying that, I think, is, and one argument for not actively taking organizational player development kind of status into account.
Mm-hmm.
In doing this, is that we factor in the development when the development happens.
Yes, and I've made this
point. So you kind of get at a risk of double counting.
Right. I've made this point before, too, with, you know, Jared mentions the Worth and Slider. So I've made this point with the Worth and Slider specifically, is that, you know, we ranked Steven Matz very highly after the 2015 season because he had come up and was still eligible because he slept in peak Mets fashion, slept on like an uncomfortable mattress and missed enough time on the IL with a bad back that he didn't get to 50 innings. And obviously he got over 50 because he made several playoff starts, but you know, by the rules of rookie eligibility, he was eligible. But my point was, he had just started to throw that slider at the end of that season. I think he had thrown like 20 of them, and he threw more in the playoffs, but it had started to happen, right? You could see it, you could project it. Here's, and Jarrett makes this point too, our job is to figure out the jumps before they happen, in a way.
Right.
It's silly to ask us to be soothsayers in that way, especially in a...
But that's the game.
Especially in, that's why people read it, right? They want to know who the good major leaguers are going to be. And if we think Dalton Rushing is going to be a better major leaguer than Henry Davis, we should write that.
Yeah. Right.
The phrase I always use, and it's kind of weaselly, is that it has to be a sustainable argument.
Mm-hmm.
But what does that actually mean? And who's deciding who the sustainable argument is? It's me, because my name is on the list. That's what it comes down to, right? I'm kind of putting myself aside from the stuff I'm doing, which is a silly thing to do.
We should boil just down the premise of his article, which is like, should we take organizational player development abilities into account?
And and it's specifically the fact that the Dodgers made Will Smith that's taking the player out of it.
Take credit away from the player.
Right. But
it's a combination. It's an amalgamation of the org and the player.
The fact that the Dodgers and their players have had organizational developmental successes beyond what we would consider from a linear progression from where they were drafted and rated as prospects. It's a mouthful.
Right. And a lot of them.
A lot of them.
It's not just like some key guys.
I did this on a three quarters delivery when we were doing the Royals list review a couple of years ago. And I noted that like the Royals drafted all those college pitchers, Brady Singer,
Jackson Kovar. Athletic.
There's a fourth one there I'm forgetting too, but
Jonathan Bolin.
Jonathan Bolin's in there. Daniel Lynch. I think Lynch might have been the year. No, Lynch was that year too.
It was the four that year were Singer, Kovar, Bolin, and Lynch.
Okay, yeah, Bubich might have been the year.
Lacy the next year. I think.
And Bubich might have been the year before. I don't remember. But these were all prospects that ranked, you know, I think Singer made a couple 101s. I think Bubich made one. I think Kovar made one. And my point was, like, when you're taking the college guys, theoretically you should have. And these were polished college guys, advanced college arms from major programs. Like, and look, Brady Singer's turned out all right.
He's been good this year.
You know, there's a lot of other things that have happened with him, but there should be less to do, right? It's like polishing up, refining, whatever you want to say. And the point I made was the fact that they haven't actually improved any of these guys is an issue. And you're going to see is more of an issue now with guys like Mazzucato, the other prep kid they took from Jersey last year, too. Because now you actually have to do the work.
Right.
Because you can't just take this skinny 17-year-old kid from Connecticut sitting 89 with feel from spin and just assume level by level he's going to get there.
Yeah. I also think, and Jarrett says this in the article, and he and I talked about it as part of the article, like I think the state of play has changed in terms of how we approach factoring this stuff in these days. I think it's more necessary to factor in now because the gap between the teams that are great at it and the teams that are bad at it is wider, or at least more meaningful.
Yeah.
Right. It seems to me that there's maybe less variance, right? Like the top and the bottom 7 to 10 years ago in terms of player development, it was still very scattershot in terms of how it turned out. You were going to get the guys at the bottom getting some developmental wins anyway.
Yeah.
Now, again, if you look, it's I know we talk about the Dodgers all the time, but again, like Yency Almonte leaves the Rockies and shows up in LA and has a 1.8 ERA.
It's no longer,
and no one is surprised.
And this ties in with the Royals again. It's no longer the idea that you can there's always the expectation that you have to kind of like coach them up with like the prep outfielders and whatever. There's more developmental room, more developmental work to do, more developmental room. But now like the Dodgers are doing this with Nick Nastrini, with Emmett Sheehan, like known college arms. Yeah. And we saw this with the Cardinals and Gordon Graceffo, for example, too.
Yeah.
Where it's like you're taking guys that are like, you know, known quantities, and having major developmental gains, which is just wasn't common 7 or 8 years ago with college pitchers. And the fact that the Royals can't do that or didn't do that with their crop, I think, is more noticeable now. Like, if you gave Jackson Kovar to the Dodgers, because he's an interesting one because the fastball shape's not great. He doesn't really have a breaking ball. If you gave him to the Dodgers, what would that look like?
So, and I think that's the really interesting part of all of this is I think the Royals, again, I'm not saying this with any inside knowledge, but what it appears to me is at least a few years ago when they drafted these guys, they were drafting profiles.
Yeah.
right? Like you said, polished starter, good, you know, they got good results. It's not that there were aspects they were drafting.
Right. Not,
they were,
not they were huge,
velocity
not,
or this and that.
Not huge but upside, you talked but about likely Mazzucato. To be quick to the majors, mid-rotation starters.
But you talked about Mazzucato and you said this high spin guy and whatever. I don't think they were drafting for spin. I don't think they were drafting for certain types of spin. I don't think they were drafting types of arm slots.
Projectable patterns. Prep. It's just projectable prep lefty. That is what they
it's
saw.
It's a profile.
It's a profile.
It's a profile. And it's a good profile.
Yeah, absolutely.
You liked him.
Yeah.
But again, not just Coar. What does Mazzucato look like in LA? Mm-hmm.
And that's like the thing. To... Like when I was doing this intuitively when I was watching him and trying to gauge where he would be drafted, basically. My thought was, you know, I had him as basically, I started like second, third round by the time I moved up to like comp or second, but I figured he'd go late first because of the pitch type characteristics. You look at him, would be drafting in that range on the Padres, the Dodgers. So I think we're both linked to him at various times. I think he did a private workout for the Padres too. Obviously he didn't end up getting to the end of the first, so it didn't really matter. But you look at those.
He didn't get to the 10th. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah. But he also got, he was an underslot.
He was underslot.
Pick there, whatever.
He got like late first round money. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it you know, the general way. But like, that's the thing. It's like, he went to the Royals. And I talked to people in the game about it. There's kind of like, yeah, like we wanted to draft him. Like, I don't know how it's going to play. I know what we would do. I know. And the Royals have already shortened his arm action pretty clearly. And, you know, he's walking 7/9 after doing that. And he's got a little more fastball velocity, but not out of line of where he was, especially, I think, early in his senior season in high school. And he's only thrown 70 innings this year. So.
And look, I keep highlighting the Dodgers because it was the focus of this article with Dalton rushing and whatever. But if you want to sub in the Rays with pitching, sure. If you want to sub in the Yankees with pitching, Cleveland, if you want to talk about the Orioles and swing decisions and hitters at this point, I think that's fair game. I mean, there are a number of teams, and Jarrett runs through a bunch of them, and that are good at different aspects of this type of development. I think the Dodgers tend to get a lot of credit for being good at almost all of them. But even they miss, right? Like Maddox runs, it looked like he was throwing strikes. He's not throwing strikes.
Right.
And we'll see. It's early. He's not old. I mean, he's 19 or 20. But, you know, I think in my discussion with Jarrett when editing this article and really just kind of the way I've been thinking about it over the years is I do think given the gap between the Dodgers and look, I think the Pirates are going to get better. I don't think Ben Cherington is lost in this way that the way that previous Pirates management was. But I also think like Bob Nutting is not necessarily investing in this stuff the way that other teams are. Like again, with it's kind of easier to do with pitching, but like again, would you take Dalton rushing on the Dodgers to be better than Henry Davis on the Pirates?
So I don't know yet. I haven't done the 101.
I don't think you have to. I'm not saying you have to, but the mere fact that it might be a hard decision, I think tells you that we do have to take into account where these guys land and what they're going to pick up and learn and you know, mold into their game.
The argument that I've internalized, not original to me, but the argument that I've internalized and that I've used with Jarrett every time this comes up is that, well, they could be traded tomorrow.
And I talked to him about and he put in the piece Calvert Ruiz and Josiah Gray.
Yep.
I think you would feel a lot better about Josiah Gray on the Dodgers than you would on the Nationals. And he was there in the majors on the Dodgers and he was looking interesting and he's now in the majors on the Nationals and he looks about the same.
Yeah. And I guess if I were to counter my own point, it's like, yeah, well, they haven't been traded yet. How can we project them being like the whole point is to, you know, make a sustainable argument. The sustainable argument cannot be, well, they might get traded because.
Right.
Yeah, I think
the argument and the thing that you have to factor in is that they could be traded, but you just have to, that just has to be a part of the analysis, but it can't be the end of the analysis.
Yeah.
So, I think to go back to the really quickly, just the point on the Royals drafting profiles instead of traits. Mm-hmm. The teams that are doing this are drafting traits, and they're not ignoring profile, and they're not ignoring results. Right. But they are drafting. Like,
right.
Yeah.
I think you can look at Maddox Bruns and say he was a projectable prep lefty. Where I think the teams, like, because early in the draft, like, you're just going to have the amount of information about these players to just be more democratically spread across the 30 teams because they're known quantities, and you're not, you know, but like in the fourth round, let's say, which I think is where they drafted Nastrini, are you looking? That's when you can, like, are you just looking? The Mets did this for years. Actually, the Mets did this. Literally in 2021, the Mets could have drafted Nick Nastrini. They drafted JT Schwartz, who was a major college performer at UCLA, but probably can't really hit for power with wood bats against professional pitching and is a first baseman. But they always liked it drafting major college performers over identifiable and developable tools, right?
Right. Whereas, and if you want to go back again, this guy's name comes up in the in the article, but the Orioles drafted in 2020's fourth round Kobe Mayer.
Yes,
right. And if you see the success of Gunnar Henderson thus far, obviously Jordan Westbrook's not at the majors, but he's hitting. It's hard not to think, well, they seem to be able to do this thing, right, with someone like this. And fact, you don't say it's fait accompli, right? Like, it's not, oh, he's going to be good now, but you might raise the likelihood of him being good.
Yeah,
now.
And then they gave him like second round money, so it's not.
No,
like,
right? Yeah, he was very talented. I'm not. Again, this isn't. I don't mean to separate the org from the player. It's a combination of the two. But again, like, some of these guys get second round money. I mean, you talked about the someone earlier in the show. You get second round money, and they don't. Go or the Tigers guy, the catcher, got $1 million. It's like, you know, didn't work out. So I think that's a really interesting discussion, and it's one that we're going to, and you especially are going to encounter a lot. But I do think it's important to have a perspective on. I think there are a variety of valid perspectives, but you have to know kind of where you are with it.
Right, and you can't have just to bring all the way back around, you can't have the Dalton Rushing, Henry Davis discussion without noting that Henry Davis is in AA. He has a longer track record of hitting.
Yep.
Yeah. So that also matters.
That matters too. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Since we are talking about a Pirates player, let's stick with that and go around the horn. Ke'Bryan Hayes, another developmental... success and not. I mean, people are just saying if he puts the ball in the air, he'll be a superstar. Now, he might be a star. He might eventually be a star anyway. The defense is that good.
Right. That's right. The defense is that good, but.
Sometimes you're not playing defense. You're not involved in the play, Jeff.
So, he gave a quote where it's like, I just eat sunflower seeds all game. And like, I'm sure like when you're. Look, as we've discussed with like pace of play, there's a long time between pitches, and you got to do whatever it does to sort of keep yourself in the moment. I guess mindfulness is the term. Maybe like eating sunflower seeds constantly is the way he stays in the moment. I will also say, Ke'Bryan Hayes, if not the best defensive third baseman in baseball, is in the conversation. I'm gonna trust him that he knew there wasn't gonna be a play at third base.
Yeah.
In
so,
that moment.
The optics
are bad. I'll set the scene. Eduardo Escobar is on first, running with the pitch. I think it was Tomas Nito hit a little flare into right field, little duck snort over the first baseman's head. Escobar stops at second, looks, sees where it is, continues running. There's never going to be a play at third base. He ends up scoring.
I was going to say he rounded there. I mean, like,
he really probably should have been out at the plate, but it was a bad throw in from, I don't know if it was Mitchell and Wright or somebody else, but he scores. And they didn't even notice it. It was the Mets post-game show ran it back, so Todd Zeal could do like a little rant about Ke'Bryan Hayes eating sunflower seeds while Escobar rounds him. But Ke'Bryan Hayes has a play in front of him the whole time. Like, he knows if there's he's got to go to cover third. And he knows, like, in that situation, you'd expect the right fielder to either toss it into the second baseman or run it in himself to kind of hold the runner at third. Didn't end up happening, obviously. But you would not expect the ball to come to third base. Now, again, is it good optics that he's sitting there eating sunflower seeds? No. I will point out, nothing about the Pirates is good optics, and it has very little to do with Ke'Bryan Hayes.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, it's not a great look. At the same time, is it really different than, like, when a guy blows a bubble in the middle
of something? Yeah, I don't think it needed to be, something. I don't think it needed to be a whole post-game segment on SNY. Like, that was just a little weird to me to blow that up.
I agree. I don't think it needed to be a thing. And to say, like, this is being a Pirate, maybe true, but kind of uncalled for. The other part is, like, if something was going to happen, he'd just drop him. Like, it doesn't really matter. I mean, this is to me just a thing to get, like, old timers.
Yeah. And, like,
frothed up a little bit.
And Zeal is a little bit of a, you know, old ball players never die from Bill James on the post game. He is a little bit of a red ass about stuff like that, which is, you know, but again, I just, yeah, it's whatever to me.
Look, the Pirates, if it's a kangaroo court bigger problems, thing, like, they can handle that in
their Oh, that's the other thing, too. Clubhouse. Yeah, whatever. If you want to do the, he's got a, what is the right to go and get coffee for everybody or whatever, like the Rockies do with the rookies, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Then, I will, like, point out, 87th percentile on average exit velocity, 89th percentile on max exit velocity, 88th percentile on hard hit percentage.
What's that launch angle?
48% ground ball rate.
What's the launch angle?
The average launch angle is 6.3.
Yeah, you make that 10 and we're talking.
Yeah.
You know? But you did a lot of 88th percentile.
Yeah.
OPS plus 88.
Yeah.
Just go work with Ke'Bryan in the offseason. Go work with the Dodgers offseason guys. Yeah. Please. We all want it. I want this win for Pittsburgh as much as anyone else.
When he hits home runs, they are impressive home runs.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we saw that in, like, futures games too. Yeah. Batting practice, he can knock it out. All right, because we are a Mets podcast, we are also going to note Max Scherzer is back.
Six perfect, looked good.
Six perfect. He did not get the Kershaw, which is seven perfect, and get pulled. He was on a very firm pitch count, first game back of the coming off the oblique injury. Mm-hmm. He looked great.
He looked great. He looked really good. Yeah, it's about as good as he's looked. Again, and it's against the Brewers lineup, who they strike out a lot.
Not great, but had something to play for. Yeah. It was a very highly anticipated Burns Scherzer, against Scherzer Burns,
yeah,
matchup.
We got
Burns. Burns threw a pitch that Pete Alonso massacred. So, like, 3 feet foul, and then he threw the same pitch.
No, I think it was back-to-back changeups? I don't think the one.
I thought it was. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think it was. So the thing with Alonso's been slumping lately, and he's been kind of getting himself out on stuff moving glove side away off the plate. And Corbin Burns, I don't know if you know this, has a 96-mile-an-hour cutter that kind of does that, correct?
He wasn't throwing that pitch.
I know. Jeffrey. It's not that he has a bad changeup. He has a perfectly fine changeup. I just would not throw my third best pitch to Pete Alonso right there.
Yeah, I firmly agree. This bodes well for the Mets. They remain one?
It's still one game up, yeah. We didn't know, this is an in around the horn, but Atlanta swept Philly in.
Right.
Fairly outside of the, it wasn't really, we had to get the 6-run bottom of the eighth on the Friday night game with Philly up a run. But other than that, I think it was a fairly straightforward
drubbing, I would say. Yeah, it wasn't weird, but it was rough for Philly, who is now in the third wild card spot. I think
they're still a half game ahead of the Padres.
They're half game back now.
Or half game back of the Padres. Okay,
Padres reeled off a few, in a, three in a row at this point.
Yeah, they're playing the Diamondbacks. That does help.
Phillies have lost four in a row.
They're two and a half up on Milwaukee. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And Milwaukee has lost two in a row.
I think the Phillies are still going to make it, but they're not making it easy on themselves.
They are not. The Guardians went 4-1 in a five-game set against Minnesota. They ended Minnesota's season for all intents and purposes. Minnesota is now 7 back. They are below 500, 73-74. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, they gave up four. The fifth game was a Monday afternoon game yesterday.
Yeah.
And it was the only game on at the time, so a lot of people watching. They gave up four early. They start fighting back. Nick Gordon hits a home run to pull within one.
We have successfully podcast reverse jinx Nick Gordon power. He's hit two home Gordon, runs, yeah. I think, since Friday.
He pulls the Twins within one. They get guys on base. They hit into a crushing double play and then immediately give up three more runs. I mean, it's just this team. Oh, what a miserable experience this team. The White Sox are 4 games back, which is going to be tough. But they are starting
right now. Yeah,
they are starting a 3-game. Do you want to talk more about the Guardians, or do you want to just go into what to watch with that?
I do
want to
make one note about the the Guardians. They're 12 games over 500 now. They've got
it's just their offense sucks.
I mean.
Their pitching and defense is good.
It's literally mostly Jimenez and Jose Ramirez carrying the offense at this
point. Kwan's been good.
Kwan's been fine. Oscar Gonzalez has been good since he came up. Josh Naylor has been all right.
He has moments.
Yeah, but you know they've given and like look, I know Miles Straw is a good defender. He has a 62 OPS plus, and he's gotten 543 plate appearances for them.
He's a very good defender. I think he was much better last year.
Yes. There's not a single hitter with a OPS plus over 100 on their bench. And their current options are Owen Miller faded hard, didn't he?
Yes.
It's like Richie Palacios, Tyler Freeman, Will Benson. Nolan Jones is back in the minors. Will Benson.
So I wanted to... I wanted to pass this along from Mike Petriello. He tweeted this yesterday, but he said, I'm just fascinated by what Cleveland is doing because over the last 30 days, they are 29th in runs scored. Only Miami has fewer, but again, like their pitching and their defense really good.
We talk about
Ahmed Rosario has been fine offensively and a very good defender this year.
I would just say that we talk a lot about maybe wanting the sixth seed. Bieber, McKenzie, and Quantrill in a 3-game series is not easy. It's a good bullpen, too, so they can go short with those guys. You know, they can run them 5-6 innings and then throw Karinchak and Class A for multiple innings.
But you'd still...
You know, you got Sam Hankins as a lefty. No.
Not easy, but is it really better than...
You can pitch to this lineup is the thing, right? Yeah.
Well, there's that. And is it better than Castillo... Kirby Gilbert?
You think they got to start Robbie Ray, right? They might not. They
probably, Ray, fine.
They probably shouldn't, is the thing.
He's been rough lately. He's had periods where he's looked like most of 2021 Robbie Ray. That period is not of late.
Right.
But you know what I mean? Like, is that really better?
No, I know what you mean, I'm just saying I don't think...
Would you take them over the other... wild card rotation. So
yes, I think that is probably true. I don't know. Like the Rays guys have McClanahan and
Rasmussen.
I bet you, but they don't have the third guy.
Right? Jeffrey Springs. I guess Springs is freaking.
Toronto
incredible.
Has the same issue, right? They've got Manoah and Gosman. They don't. I assume it's going to be Berrios in the third spot, but it's like
right. Yeah, exactly.
And not that Cal Quantrill. I don't know if I would actually trust Cal Quantrill.
He's one of those guys where it's like his peripherals don't support six per nine, his results. I know, but he does it. It's like clockwork kind of every year. Like he's outperforming the peripherals every time. So.
Right, again, as we said, it's a really good infield defense too.
Good infield defense. Absolutely. And again, like Kwan has been a good defender in the outfield. Straw is a good defender. Oscar Gonzalez is not. okay, but let's go into what to watch. It's the for me, it's the Guardians White Sox.
This is the only series with any real juice, I think, right?
I don't think the White Sox have to sweep, but you have to get two.
I think they got to sweep.
They
have like 10 games left after this series.
They're within three, right? I guess that's tough. Yeah, that's a lot. That's right. I got in my head for a second, it was two games, but you're right. That's three. That's hard to do. Yeah, I mean, they probably have to sweep. They'd gotten zero help from Minnesota in that series. There's also Jays Phillies, an aesthetic pleasure.
Yes.
I love when these two teams play each other.
Good unis, definitely. I believe it's in Citizens.
Both Bank playing Park. For something?
I believe it's in Citizens That's Bank nice. Park, which is, I mean, not that the Sky Dome or the Rogers Center is a bad place to hit, but like, you could see some, some 12-8
And I think Citizens Bank is a nice, like, it's a nice park to, watch a game. It's fine on TV.
Yeah.
I really like that one. And then you got Cardinals and Padres.
Sure.
Sure. I mean, again, playoff relevant teams at least. Three series versus playoff relevant teams with playoff relevant teams playing each other. Well, Mets Brewers have
two more. Mets Brewers have two more, too.
The playoff
relevant as well. I guess a note on that, I'll throw this in here too. I'm going to be doing a playback of the Getaway Day game on Wednesday for Mets and Brewers. Something a little different. I'm writing the Mets prospect list right now. I'm just going to chat Mets prospects and I'll talk about the game.
Oh, very nice. That is Taiwan Walker and Adrian Hauser.
Yeah, so we'll be talking about
prospects.
It's fine. We'll talk about the game if anything interesting happens. But I'm going to try to do a couple of these before the season's out for lists I'm working on. It'll probably be like Mets, Rockies, and Twins are the ones I'm working on currently. So again, not the most exciting games in the world, but yeah, if I can find some afternoon or some evening games to do, I'll do it. Yeah,
sounds good. All right, well, I think that'll do it for us today. Thank you, Jeff, for co-hosting the episode. Thank you to our listeners for tuning into another episode of Five and Dive, brought to you by the Baseball Perspectives Podcast Network and our Patreon supporters. You can support the Patreon at patreon.com/fiveanddive, and you can get in touch with the show at fiveanddive@baseballperspectives.com. We are wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Baseball Perspectives Podcast Network, and we'll be in that feed. We will see you on Friday. Enjoy the baseball that's happening.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.